Hello, everyone. It's Bill Thompson, T-Bill, and welcome to Plain Market Talk, where I will provide a straightforward interpretation and analysis of current market news based on my background as a retired Wall Street stockbroker with almost 50 years of experience. And I will also provide business lessons to help you become much more successful with your personal finance, trading, and investments. So let's get started. Hey everyone, it's Bill Thompson, T-Bill. Welcome to Plain Market Talk. Today's Thursday, August 17, 2023. Okay, it's 11:22 in the morning Eastern Time. We'll take a look at what's going on with the markets here in just a minute. I'll continue on talking about cryptocurrencies. Today, what I'm going to do is explain very basic concepts, how Bitcoin works, including what is order blockchains and data mining. Got some news moving over there on Hollywood strikes now. Things are starting to move a little bit. Talk about what's going on with that. Walmart has upped its earnings and revenue outlook for the rest of the year. Walmart is the world's largest corporation. Talk about just how big that company is. Also today, talk about movie industry a little bit too. It was announced yesterday that Barbie is now Warner Brothers' biggest movie, overtaking Batman Dark Knight. But is it? We'll talk about how the numbers work in Hollywood. Also today, talk a little bit about historical returns on the stock market on a monthly basis. So we'll probably start with that. Right now, the markets are down just a little bit. We have the Dow Jones Industrial Average down 0.2%. S&P 500 down 0.03%. NASDAQ Composite down 0.38%. Yeah, markets have been down the last few days and are down now for the month of August so far. Although, as measured by the S&P 500, markets are up 15% for the year. What the markets are concerned about, Federal Reserve in its recent meeting minutes has indicated it might raise interest rates even more to try to slow the economy down, bring inflation down. Federal Reserve's done a pretty good job bringing inflation down. They brought it down now from the 9.5% annualized rate it was at as we came out of the COVID shutdown, down to 3.2%. But ideally, the Federal Reserve's trying to get inflation down to 2% a year. I've mentioned on previous sessions, the challenge with the Federal Reserve by raising interest rates and decreasing the money supply is they don't want to throw the economy into a recession, particularly with a big election year coming up. Even though the Federal Reserve is supposed to be non-political, it does answer to Congress. And next year, besides obviously the presidential election, we have the entire House of Representatives and Congress up for re-election. They serve two-year terms, and one-third of the Senate. The worst thing an incumbent politician seeking re-election wants to have happen is for the economy to then be in a recession as the election happens, because then you're going to have a certain group of people say, we'll just vote for somebody else, see if they can change things. So, but I think the Federal Reserve, the economy is showing a lot of resiliency, and I think the Federal Reserve is confident enough now that it can raise interest rates some more without throwing the economy into a recession. The reason the stock market, one of the reasons, doesn't like higher interest rates is as interest rates go up, people begin selling stocks and buying bonds. Now, bonds, again, being loans to governments or corporations because they're paying relatively higher interest. So that's what we have going on there. Now, as far as historical returns on a monthly basis, a lot of people just would assume that October would be the worst month of the year for the stock markets, because that's when we've had, you know, the two big crashes, the crash in 1929 and also the crash in 1987 that I personally experienced as a stockbroker. Now, actually, the markets have been overall up for the month of October. The worst months of the year for the markets have actually been August and September. Although over the last few years, August has generally been better. So now it's actually just September, but I do have some numbers here. Now, this is from Yardeni Research, Yardeni. It's yardeni.com. And these numbers are from 1928 through July 31st, 2023, so they're right up to date. Yeah, basically October, the markets have on average up 0.6%. And now August, which used to be a negative month, actually up 0.7% when you measure it over, you know, the 95 years or so in the time period. September down 1.1%. That's the worst year of the month for the markets. Matter of fact, let me just quickly go through all 12 months just to give you an idea. Again, you can go to yardeni.com and look it up yourself. But here are the averages on a monthly basis for the stock market for the last 95 years. January, the markets on average are up 1.2%. February down 0.1%, so basically flat. March up 0.6%. April up 1.4%, so April's a really good month. May down 0.1%, again, basically flat. June up 0.8%. July historically is the best month, up 1.7%. August up 0.7%, as I mentioned. September down 1.1%, so that's the worst month. Then October is actually up 0.6%, November up 0.9%, December up 1.3%. Yet a period from October, November, December, January, we have four consecutive months that the markets are up. And historically, actually, November, December, January have been the best months of the year, the time period of the year for the markets. And September has historically been the worst month. But again, that's historical data that may or may not happen this month. So anyway, we got that. I was asked a while back, what is the worst month in stock market history? I had to look it up. Actually, it goes all the way back to 1931, when the Great Depression was really beginning to take hold. So worst month ever for the market was September 1931. Markets were down 30.2%. The one I experienced, October of 87, markets down 21.8%. But yeah, September 31, markets lost almost a third of its value. So that was the worst month ever. Okay, so what else we got? Aldi. Aldi's big supermarket chain out of Germany. I know ALDI, it spells out something. They're buying Winn-Dixie. Winn-Dixie's a big supermarket chain here in the Southeast. It used to be probably the prevalent supermarket chain, but it's been overshadowed over the last few years by Publix supermarkets, P-U-B-L-I-X, for those not from this area, in the Southeast. They do about $50 billion a year in sales, although it's a private company. The stock does not trade. What I mean by private, the stock does not trade on the New York Stock Exchange or NASDAQ. But anyway, yeah, they've been overtaken by Publix and also Walmart. Walmart supermarkets have begun to do really well. So Winn-Dixie's, you know, it's had some issues over the years. Came close to bankruptcy a while back. Aldi's increasing its presence. So it's buying Winn-Dixie and also Harvey's supermarkets. I'm in the Orlando area. I don't think we have any Harvey's here, but and they eventually want to convert it to Aldi stores. So Aldi's going to be a bigger presence here at the supermarket. So something to keep an eye out. Yeah, Walmart announced that they're increasing their outlook now for revenue, sales, and profit throughout the rest of the year. They said they're seeing a lot of growth in the grocery division, also online sales. They become a big online player, giving Amazon somewhat a run of its money, But anyway, yeah, so that's been really big growth areas. You know, I know they have those freestanding supermarkets. They have some near where I live. And then, of course, they've got the supermarket areas inside the big Walmart stores themselves. Apparently, there's a big growth areas. Yeah, as far as how big Walmart is, first of all, when I started as a stockbroker, I'd never heard of Walmart. You know, I started in 1975. The big retail stores back then were Sears Roebuck was the big one, and to some extent, Montgomery Ward. I first heard of Walmart maybe 1979. By then, Kmart was the big up-and-coming retailer. And I talked to somebody whose husband was an executive at Kmart, and she told me that, they obviously look at Sears as a competitor, but she said they're really more worried about some company out of Texas called Walmart. I'd never heard of them, so I did some research. Found out they were actually based out of Arkansas, Bentonville, Arkansas, but they were only in three states back then, Arkansas, Oklahoma, and Texas, and then obviously exploded in size. So today they're considered the world's largest corporation. So how do we measure how big is a corporation? We use sales, revenues. We don't use assets, things of value, because a lot of companies own assets that's hard to put a value on. You know, real estate they bought 150 years ago, downtown in cities. McDonald's Golden Arches is considered the most recognized corporate symbol in the world. What kind of value do you put on that? Now, we use sales. Generally, a sales, also known as revenue, bigger the sales, bigger the company. To give you some perspective, McDonald's is considered a big company. They do around $23 billion a year in sales. Disney does about, I think, close to $80 billion now, maybe $78 billion a year in sales. They're about three times bigger than McDonald's. Home Depot, I think, does around $150 billion a year in sales. Apple, about $380 billion a year in sales. Amazon, I think they do around, I'd have to look it up, around $470, $480 billion a year, maybe a little more than that now. Then you have Walmart at $611 billion a year in sales. They are so big that if Walmart was its own country, it would qualify as a member of the G8, eight largest economies in the world. To give you a perspective, though, you know, $611 billion, if you take that number, divide by 365, you get daily sales, divide by 24, you get hourly sales, divide by 60, you get sales in a minute, divide by 60, sales in a second. That works out to $19,325 a second. So let me just quickly count to five. One, two, three, four, five. In 5 seconds, Walmart just ran up almost $100,000 in sales. Every 5 seconds, it actually is about $97,000, but I think you get the idea. So yeah, that is just a big, big company. So who would have known that little store? You can use a search engine like Google, type in first Walmart store and see it. That little store in Bentonville, Arkansas. I think 1962 would become the world's largest corporation. It actually only took them about 50 years to get there. So anyway, we got that. It was announced yesterday. The Barbie movie is now Warner Brothers' biggest movie ever, or Warner's, whatever they call themselves, Discovery Warner. Anyway, yeah, it overtook The Dark Knight, Batman Dark Knight. Barbie's done about, I think, $550 million in U.S. Box office sales, $1.2 billion worldwide. Right now, the Super Mario Brothers, the biggest movie of 2023, $1.325 billion, but Barbie's still in the theaters. We'll probably overtake it, end up as the biggest movie of 2023. But you got to be careful there, because we measure box office, you know, I've talked about this before, as number of tickets sold times ticket price. When The Dark Knight was released in 2008, I looked it up. Average movie tickets were $7.15. Today, they're around $14. And so today, tickets are twice as much as 2008. So if Barbie and Dark Knight sold exactly the same number of tickets, Barbie's box office would be twice as much. But still, a big success. So the Hollywood strikes. We got the writers on strike, and you got the actors. I use actors for male and female. I mentioned on the last session that there's been some talk that the studios are just going to wait everybody out, until the writers and actors start losing their homes and everything else can come crawling back. Well, I talked about in the last session, particularly with the actors, that may or may not work. Many of these actors are not full-time. They have other jobs. But the thing is, one argument that the studios might wait things out, they've been losing billions of dollars on the streaming services trying to build audiences, and they've accumulated a lot of debt. There's some scenarios it might be better for them to shut things down, cut the losses, and pay down their debt. Well, anyway, but I mentioned in the last session that my guess would be if they're going to do anything, they might try to cut a deal with the writers first because they're harder to replace, and then try to possibly break the actors' union by hiring the actors, as non-union. I'm not saying I agree with that it's right, but I'm saying that's what I thought they might do. And lo and behold, 2 days after I said that on the last session, the studios made an offer to the writers to end the strike. The Writers Guild of America, the union, WGA, they said they are studying the offer carefully and will make a response by probably Monday. So nobody really knows what are the specifics of the offer. There's some saying that the studios are willing to meet a lot of the writers' demands to get them back. Others say they're still far apart. You know, if they get the writers back, first of all, why would they be doing that rather than wait things out? Well, studios are realizing they got to be careful here. Right now, most people don't even notice probably any effect from the writers and actors being on strike because new movies are being released, new TV shows, because they were already completed. It's going to be 2024 where we suddenly have no new movies coming out. Streaming services have no new TV shows coming out. And the studios have to be careful that people just don't start dropping these streaming services because there's nothing new coming out and not come back. Movie theaters are still recovering from COVID, and suddenly there's no new movies. People stop going and find other things to do. That's a concern. They find other things to do. Baseball found that out. When we had the baseball strike in 1994, the World Series was canceled. Many fans just never came back. They just found other things. So there's some talk that that might be a reason that the studios are now realizing we need to do something here and end this thing. So yeah, if they get the writers back, they could conceivably go to actors and say, we'd like to now hire you for our next movie, you know, as non-union. You know, the actor, again, male or female, may fire back. Absolutely not. I am loyal to my union. No. Okay, what's a Marvel movie? Well, union's overrated. When do we start filming? Yeah. You know, people change their attitudes quickly. Like here in Florida, I remember the Tampa Bay Bucks fans' opinion of Tom Brady when he was still with the New England Patriots. Basically, their opinion was, that cheating Tom Brady? Yeah, did you hear he's a new quarterback for the Bucks? Oh, well, Tom's just competitive. Anyway, people change. I don't think they're going to try to break the union, though. I think what'll happen, we're probably in a matter of weeks. My guess is we'll see the writer strike in first, and then they'll cut a deal with the actors. So we might have some delays and some stuff coming out in 2024, but I think things are going to end up getting worked out. All right, so the last thing today, I just want to talk about continuing our cryptocurrencies. I want to give just a general overview of how Bitcoin works. And then on future sessions, I want to talk about the definitions of money. I'm going to do that on the next session, I think. Do cryptocurrencies meet all the definitions of money? We'll talk about that. More detail, how cryptocurrencies work, how the mechanics of them work, challenges their cryptocurrencies are facing, outlook for the future. But today I want to just give you a general idea of what Bitcoin, that is the largest of the cryptocurrencies and probably the best known. All right, so here's just quickly how it works. And again, I'll cover more detail in future sessions. Bitcoin's been around since 2009. Basically, it's money that is created on a computer. Every 10 minutes, 6.25 new Bitcoins are created. Based on the current price of around $28,000 per Bitcoin, those 6.25 Bitcoins are worth around $177,000. So every 10 minutes, $177,000 in new Bitcoins are created. So who gets that? Well, you can actually win it. Here's the way it works. You go to a supermarket with a debit card and you buy groceries, okay? What happens? You put your debit card in the machine. Supermarket's computer sends the transaction to its bank. Its bank contacts your bank. Your bank then withdraws the money, sends it back to the supermarket's bank. Supermarket's bank sends the transaction as confirmed back to the terminal, and you get approved, and you're ready to go. That takes just a few seconds. If you were to do that with Bitcoin, there's no central bank to process the transactions. The transactions are bundled up into what are called blocks, and they are put on an electronic conveyor belt, like a blockchain, as it's called. And then somebody has to go in and verify that these transactions are valid. It's a valid Bitcoin, and you actually own it. Okay, so what happens? Anybody could technically do that on their computer. So you go ahead and process a block of transactions. And what happens for every block and you process, it takes about 10 minutes though to process this, so it's not instantaneous like debit cards. All right, so what happens with that new 6.25 Bitcoins worth about $177,000 currently? There's a number that is generated. The number can have up to 64 digits. You have to guess as close as you can. Whoever guesses a number as close to that as possible wins the Bitcoins. It's kind of like playing the lottery. Like say this gigantic 64-digit number was created, although it doesn't always have to be 64 digits, but it could be. Whoever guesses the number closest to that wins the Bitcoins. So for every block of transactions you process, you get another guess. And so the more transactions, blocks you can process, more guesses you get. Unlike the lottery where you have to hit the number exactly, with Bitcoin, who's ever closest to it without going over, kind of like Price is Right, where you guess the thing without going over. Anyway, so what happens? People then began processing these blocks, the blockchain, to try to get these numbers to guess at this you know, magic number to win the Bitcoins. And that is called data mining. And so what groups do now, individuals and groups, they use a lot of computer power to try to plot process as many blocks as possible. And many of them even grouped together now, to process as many blocks as possible, get as many guesses as they can, and then they'll just split the proceeds. Well, that uses a lot of electricity, and that's called data mining. So that's basically how that works. So, and then everything resets every 10 minutes. Another 6.25 Bitcoins are created. So I gave you the most basic definition of how that works, but it's a start. So we'll go with that and then get into more detail on upcoming sessions. Okay, we're going to wrap things up. Again, Bill Thompson, T-Bill. Hope everyone's doing well. Talk to you again soon. Take care. See ya.